Welcome to another episode of Million Dollar Stories, where we get to interview authors from all over the world. You know that I'm a dreamer. I like to talk to other dreamers, and I like to talk to people who help others become dreamers. And so this book is absolutely perfect. The book we're talking about is called Play Bigger: How Pirates, Dreamers, and Innovators Create and Dominate Markets. And one of the authors, Kevin Maney, is with us today. So I appreciate your time, Kevin. Thanks so much for being here.
I'm glad to do it, Mike.
So tell us a little bit about the genesis of this book. Number one, it's a simple design on the cover. I love that. It's a simple and easy to understand title. Give us the background on this.
Yeah, well, so I'm one of four people that wrote the book. The other guys, Dave Peterson, Chris Lockhead, Al Ramadan. Two of those guys, Chris and Al, I had known from previous work and life. And and there was a point in time when Al actually invited me to dinner and said, we all met at a restaurant in San Francisco. And for your audience, here's the beginning premise: was we're talking about the idea that in most markets today, and especially in digital markets, whoever wins that category, owns that category, tends to be a winner take all situation. Right, you look at Salesforce in its market, or Uber, and Lyft is a far down follower. So most digital markets, somebody takes 75% of the market. Everybody else is scraping for the rest. So if that's true, and if it's becoming even more true, because in digital markets things happen faster, they're global. It's people can always access and adopt the best thing. So if that's true, if you were running a company or starting a company, why would you not want to try to do everything you could to be that one company that defines and owns that category? Mm-hmm. So then we got thinking, okay, well, one thing you wouldn't want to be is a company that enters somebody else's category that's already been won, essentially, because now you're scraping for a little bit of market share. And you're always going to try making an argument that we're better than those guys, but everybody's already with those guys, right? So then it became, so if you're a really ambitious entrepreneur and you want to start a company, or you're running a company, maybe the right strategy is to try to create your own market category, create something new, and define it in a way that sets the rules so you have the best chance of being the one that wins that category. So if we start thinking that way, then we just said, well, what if we sort of reverse engineer, what would you do to make that happen? And essentially, once we got into all that, remember, these guys that I wrote the book with, I've been a technology, writing about the technology industry for 30 years. Those guys have been past CEOs and entrepreneurs and investors, so they kind of knew the insides of how all this stuff works. And basically, that's what we did. We re-engineered or reverse engineered how that would work, and then created a step-by-step toolkit of how would you go about creating and defining and eventually owning a new market category. And that's what the book is.
Man, I'm looking at your book right now. Guys, if you just open up his book and go to I think it's page one or two, but it's a great phrase here, a great paragraph. Winning today isn't about beating the competition at the old game. It's about inventing a whole new game, defining a new market category, developing it, and dominating it over time. You can't build a legendary company without building a legendary category. What an awesome sentence, man. If you think that having the best product is all it takes to win, you're going to lose. Really, really well done on that. And so individuals out there who are looking to start a business, right? I remember sitting in a room and people were talking about ghostwriting. And I thought to myself, man, I know I could destroy people in that competition. I can make it exciting. I can make it attractive. I just felt it inside. And so it's almost like you could see, and maybe that's how you tie in the pirate aspect, where you could go somewhere and be the first, or maybe do it in a different way that makes it look like you are the first. So tell us a little bit about how pirates kind of translate into this book.
Well, and that is sort of the mentality, right? Is that the idea that instead of being part of the establishment being, a category that exists, that these kind of intrepid entrepreneurs that we want to talk to are the kinds of people who want to get outside of that establishment, right? And do their own thing and start something new, raise that pirate flag and say, you know, we're going to be different from everybody else and operate by some different rules. And establish something that and then this other important part is what does the world, this is an important part about trying to establish a new market categories. It's not just about like, I've got this cool idea and I'm going to put it out there. It's about understanding something that's missing in the world that you can uniquely address. And that's the really key, real key to it. It has to have both sides of that equation, right? Something that's missing in the world that's needed that you can uniquely address. Mm-hmm. If you put those two things together, then you have a chance of creating something new and exciting.
So you're saying you need to have that rebel mentality somewhere in there, right? To do things differently. It makes me think of Steve Jobs and what he did early on at Mac, right? Or at Apple with, I think it was the Macintosh. He created a division. He called himself the Pirates or something along those lines, where they had a pirate flag. And it did create division within the company. But to be the rebels, it allows you to not maybe play by other people's rules, but to think in a different manner that gives you an advantage, because potentially you're thinking of it from a whole different perspective and other people are looking at it from inside the box. Rebels and pirates, there is no box.
Right. And as we argue in the book, is that if you go and play by somebody else's rules, then you're constantly trying to make an argument that you are maybe you're 10% better or 10% cheaper or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Price.
If that's the argument you're making, you then have to make that argument every day, right? And you have to constantly prove that that's true. But the way, you know, if you do something that's different from everybody else and you establish yourself in people's brains as the one who, you know, is that different entity and you understand this new market that you're creating better than anybody else, it kind of embeds that idea in people's minds. And you don't have to compete necessarily on, you know, the price and better and all that, because you're establishing people's biases as being this new thing. But, and by the way, you brought up Steve Jobs. I mean, we honor the great category designers of all time. Steve Jobs was one of the great category designers of all time. And if you think back, you're focused on this concept of pirates, you know, way back, probably before most of your audience was born in 1984, Jobs and Apple produced probably one of the most famous TV commercials in history, which was the ad introducing the Macintosh. And the whole theme of the ad was anti-establishment. Yes, there's all these computer companies, the IBMs of the world, or whatever. That's for all the corporate, you know, guys in suits. This is the computer for you pirates and dreamers. And it's different. The Mac is different from all of those others. That's how Apple's, you know, whole existence has been throughout its, you know, and that's what Jobs was great at.
Man, if I was a teenager in, what was it, 1984, I was going to be purchasing Mac, right? If I could afford
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Right.
That's the way I look at it. Nowadays, I'm not an Apple guy, but back then it would have spoke to me for sure. And you have I guess it's a chapter or a subchapter, True Stories of Kings and Kingdoms. I'm assuming maybe Steve Jobs pops up in this chapter, but you have an individual that I've never heard of named Clarence Birdseye. All right. Please tell me about Clarence Birdseye.
Well, it was a good illustration of how a category emerges and gets built. So I'm sure most of your audience walks into a grocery store, you go to the frozen food section, you see this brand called Birdseye. Probably didn't know that there was actually a guy named Clarence Birdseye who existed at one time. So here's a brief version of the story. You go back to the 1920s, and Clarence Birdseye was actually, he was a guy who was trained as a naturalist. And he would study plants and animals and, you know, and native peoples and things like that. And he got assigned, he went up to the frozen north of Canada and was witnessing these people who were fishing in fishing holes and pulling the fish out and throwing them between cakes of ice so that they would flash freeze, and realize that if you then thawed that fish weeks later, it would taste pretty close to being fresh. So he's like, oh my God, this is an interesting insight. this was also happened to be a time when there was new technology called the refrigerator that was starting to go into people's homes. For the first time, people had something that could hold, you know, freeze something that they bought in a store. So Clarence Birdseye goes back and he has this idea like that there's something missing in the world. There, you, if you want to buy vegetables, let's say, and you know, you live in New York, you either have to buy them in season and have them be fresh, or the other alternative was these canned vegetables that kind of tasted crappy. And he started to realize that if you could create a mechanism to make, you know, vegetables flash freeze them like he saw with the fish and make them frozen, you would create this new thing of fresh tasting vegetables that could last for weeks or months. So there was something, he identified something that was missing in our world, this idea that we could have fresh tasting food that would last for weeks or months, and identified a new technology that could create this, which was flash freezing these things and selling them to this new concept called a home refrigerator and freezer. And so it created an entirely new category of food called frozen food at the time. Didn't exist before.
Unbelievable.
And then from there, he built the category by saying, okay, well, if this category is going to exist, other things have to exist in this ecosystem around it. We need to invent freezer cases for grocery stores because they didn't exist yet. We needed to invent frozen cars on railroads that would have freezing capabilities on them because that didn't exist yet. So great category builders start with this, you know, insight about what is needed in the market and what technology can do that is new, create this new thing, but then constantly build this ecosystem around it to create this vibrant new category. And, you know, here we are 100 years later, and there's still a brand dominating the freezer case when we walk in called Birdseye, which came out of this whole thing. And that's the power of being able to create an important new category, because it lasts. You become a brand and a bias in people's minds that lasts forever.
Well, it does tie in with Uber in this chapter. And maybe there's a great story. It says, on a snowy night in Paris in 2008, I actually don't know the genesis of Uber. So can you share us a little bit of that?
Yeah. And you know, it's a modern version of what Clarence Birdseye did. So Travis Kalanick and his buddy, and I forget his name, who was the co-founder of Uber.
Garrett
were
Camp.
In Paris, Garrett terrible, Camp, yeah, like. Terrible weather. They're standing there on the street trying to hail a cab. And they're going like, this is a really stupid way to get a ride. The weather sucks, we're getting soaked, and I'm standing out in traffic, you know, dangerously waving at cars. And then they said, there's got to be a better way to do this. Then they realized that this is just after the iPhone had come out. We've got this thing in our pocket that has GPS on it and has maps. We could use this technology to create an entirely new way to get transportation. And so they go back and they work on what would become Uber. Here's an important point about, and we talk about this idea of setting the rules in a category and having that be an advantage for long periods of time. When you look at the first presentation Uber did to investors, it showed, and you think about it, you know, the whole idea of using a phone to hail a ride, it could have been done many, many, many different ways. But Uber did this thing where the map and the little cars on it, where you could see where they are, and you know, and the whole thing, you know, the Uber experience. And they set that up from very early on when they were first pitching investors. And what ended up happening was, not only did they create this category and everybody sort of, you know, associates Uber with this category of getting a ride, on-demand ride, but they, by doing what they did, they set the rules for the category so that if you go to any country in the world and there's ride-sharing companies that are in Indonesia and China and all these other places, and you open their app, it looks exactly like the Uber app. It does this because Uber set our expectations for how that thing should work.
Wow.
Which means that every other company coming into the space has to follow Uber's rules, which constantly gives Uber an advantage because it's setting the rules. And that's the power of being able to do that gives you this competitive advantage over long periods of time.
It's great. And I like how you put this in regards to Elvis. Elvis Presley didn't set out to disrupt jazz. He set out to create rock and roll. And I mean, you really can look into Colonel Parker, the great marketer behind him, but that was their goal, I guess, right? To create a new genre. And I believe they did, right? That's what happened. He was the king of rock because king of rock and roll because of how they viewed it before getting into it. And if there's any stories with Elvis, because I'm just a sucker for any Elvis story.
Well, here's a really important point that the Elvis story brings up. I would like to bury the word disrupt.
Okay. All right.
Because the point it look at the so the Elvis story was Elvis Presley didn't start playing the music he wanted to play because like I'm going to go and like as you just said disrupt jazz or disrupt big band music or something and put them out of business. That was never his mentality. His mentality was I'm going to create something new that people are going to love. And if this new thing ends up pushing aside an old thing, then that's something that happens. New categories push aside old categories. That happens all the time. But the idea of going, the real great, builders of businesses and companies and categories go in with the mentality, I'm creating something new that people are going to want to desire, not I'm going in to try to disrupt this old thing. And if you do that, then you will probably displace some older categories, but that's not your goal. Your goal needs to be to create, not to disrupt.
How about this, man? Your personality is on full display. I love it. And anybody who can put their true authentic self in the book, I think it's meaningful, but you have, I think it's chapter 6 somewhere in there. Mobilization. This shit gets real chapter, right? what a great way of explaining what the chapter is all about. So there is and I think you talk about discovery, right? And then the strategy and then the shit gets real. So what is that all about? Is it basically putting the wheels and the rubber to the ground and then let's see what the market let's see how the market responds. Tell me about this one.
Well, I just as a little side note, I want to tell you about, so me and these other three guys, Al, Chris, and Dave, our goal is to write this book. We decide we're going to do this book. Chris has this fabulous house in Santa Cruz, California, and that we make that our headquarters. And so we meet once a month for 2 or 3 days to hammer stuff out and then go away and do our work writing. But when we arrive there, everybody's very irreverent. It's, we're joking around. We're having a good time while we're doing this. We're taking a break at lunch to go watch some surfers. And, by 5 o'clock, the beers are coming out. And it was this whole like kind of crazy, fun atmosphere. And when we sat down to write the book, it's like, why would we take that and then write this dry business book? Let's capture what we were like, what this atmosphere was like to when we were doing this book. And so, there's a lot of F-bombs strung throughout the book. If you're reading the book and you want to have some fun, pay attention to the notes, the little side notes that are in there, because a lot of them are inside jokes and jokes about something that we wrote about. So the footnotes, word I was trying to come up with. So anyway, so the whole book has that kind of attitude about it. You asked about mobilization. And yes, mobilization is the idea. Okay, yeah, you see this new category, you understand what it is. You've written this, what we call a point of view, a POV that really captures the story of like, what's missing in the world? Why are we the ones bringing it to the world? What does this category look like? You set the rules, you do all those things, but then then you have to actually roll it out, right? And mobilization is that if you're an established company, it's how do you sell this new idea and this language to the employees inside the company first, so everybody gets it. Then how do you market it? How do you get this out into the world? And we advocated in the book this idea of lightning strikes, which is like, go do something big. Even if it's a, even if it's a pirate move, you don't have a lot of money, but you're going to go into a conference that, you know, might have a lot of people that would be interested in your product and do something crazy in the conference to get attention and, you know, and somehow get the word out. You know, we detail a bunch of things in the book, but that's the, at some point you have to actually mobilize and get this category and to get this idea out into the world and capture people's imaginations. And there's lots of ways to do that. We describe some in the book. There's, you know, there's probably many others, but that's the idea.
Do you think it just, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up, because whenever I wanted to get the word out of who I was, I went to the line of, you know, maybe sex appeal when it comes to the marketing and how it ties into the most attractive part about you is your story, right? So there are certain things that I had to do, and I believe it either took courage or maybe just a want to win so bad that I almost didn't care what anybody said about me. So either courage, whether it's like, I'm really afraid to do it, but I'm going to do it, or, you know, it's worth it. And so therefore I'm not even worried whatsoever. So that's an ingredient to this. Am I right?
Well, yeah. You know, it's, the pirate mentality is what can you do that, you know, is really going to stand out and go like, make people pay attention and, you know, come in with your pirate flag flying into the conference or into an interview on a TV show or whatever it else is that you can, you know, you manage to do, right? And make that mark.
And in part two of your book, you talk about marketing and the conditioning the market to welcome your pirate invasion. I would think within this chapter, the consistency, right? It's the ability to do it over and over and over and potentially reinvent yourself every step of the way if necessary. But tell us a little bit about the importance of maybe when you're analyzing these legendary, what do you call them? Legendary kings, right? Category kings to legendary kings. Have you noticed that there's a consistency to it, or do they pivot frequently when it comes to their marketing?
No, well, so one of the people that we honor and learn from was Mark Benioff, who started Salesforce.com. And in the beginning, it's a great pirate sort of moves, right? So the market that existed before Salesforce came around, you know, customer relationship management, CRM software. CRM software was something big companies installed on a big computer. And they had to maintain the software, and software is difficult to install. It was difficult to train people on. And then, you know, if a year later there was a newer version of the software, the company itself had to, you know, deal with installing this new thing, and, you know, it was hard to update. And companies relied on this ability, you know, to help their sales forces and understand customers and sell stuff. But Salesforce came along. This was the early days of cloud computing. And when corporations, for the most part, didn't trust cloud computing, but they came along and said, there's a better way to do this, that that on-premise CRM software sucks. And instead, you could use this software that you pay for by subscription, and we take care of all the computing and all the software in the background, and you never have to touch it. That was the premise. But what Benioff did when he came out was he totally, like, just basically attacked on-premise CRM software as an evil thing. You remember, there was this famous logo that had the word software in it and the circle with a red line across it, the no software logo. And they started plastering that everywhere. People might not even know what it meant, but it caught their attention. And then he did some crazy little things, like in the streets of San Francisco, he organized what looked like a protest against software.
Oh my God, I didn't know this.
And so people are walking down the street with holding signs with that no software logo on it and chanting like software's got to go, you know, things like that. So and so there was this consistency of message of software is evil, cloud, you know, CRM is better, a different way to do it that you've never heard of before, but try it out, you know. And he tried all of these, you know, pirate moves to try to get that out there. But the whole idea was to start to get people to open this new space in their brains that this new thing might be interesting and worth checking out. And by defining the problem so well, this idea of this evil old CRM and saying we've got a new solution, it embedded in people's minds that Salesforce knew what this new thing was all about, and created that impression that, you know, Salesforce was the go-to guy. It didn't matter if somebody else popped up and, you know, our biases were going to get set by these guys. And that's what conditioning the market is all about, is like continually to press that case so that the biases in people's minds start to form around you as the company are the one that knows the answer.
Man, there's a phrase within my company called, we always say it, think like an entrepreneur. I say it over and over on calls or meetings, whatever. So I may change it to think like a pirate now, just so you know, because it's it really does correlate. And I think of the movie like The Goonies, right? I just love the aspect of being the outsider, but being able or willing to do whatever it takes. There's a great story, I think, of Alice Cooper. Alice Cooper used to call the cops on himself just to create a ruckusness, right? He would create some type of buzz. Ozzy Osbourne, you want to break it down how he became successful? He thought like a pirate, right? Let me bite the head off of this bat or this pigeon and it'll get people talking and therefore they will not miss my shows or my albums. Really, really, really important stuff what you're saying. And so in the final chapter, I guess, or part three of it, you talk about how you could play bigger. And so are there any steps whenever it comes to, let's just say somebody's out there, they could play bigger in any industry. It's just maybe you have to think that you are different than beforehand. And therefore, maybe your message changes, your marketing changes, or maybe a new strategy comes into your life. So how can anybody in any industry start to play bigger?
Well, you know, and that's really geared towards, yes, you know, you as an individual. And, you know, Mike, you know, I mean, I sense that you embrace this completely. You know,
100%. Chris,
you know, it makes total logical sense. Is that if you are just another of something, you know, in my case, I mean, I started life as a journalist, and so, you know, I could have been another reporter that just does the same kinds of stories as everybody else. And, you know, you can make a good living. There's thousands, millions and millions of people do that, right? I mean, you can make a good living doing that. But if you never stand out as something that's different, and doing something that's valuable that the market needs, that's missing yourself as an individual, then you never quite have the same power as somebody who is just being the same as everybody else, right? If you're that different person satisfying some need that is unmet otherwise, whether it's a role inside of the company you're in, or maybe it's the store in your town that is missing and the town needs something like that. But the idea of doing something different and unique and individual and satisfying a need that nobody else can satisfy puts you in a position of having pricing power of for yourself, of being able to earn what you want, of being able to do the things that you want, and of having the satisfaction of creating something new that people pay attention to. And so the mentality that goes throughout the book about how companies should operate could very much translate into how you as an individual can operate and have a better, more fulfilling and, you know, better earning career.
Well, I think of this philosophy is not just a one-off. This is an everyday approach, right? I look at this video, for example. I thought to myself, how can my background look different than any other person? Well, I need a spinny book thing, right? So I need some neon lights. I need better lighting, a better microphone, right? So therefore, you look a little bit more professional than the next. Well, then another aspect of it comes into play. Well, how could I stand up above my competition? Well, I need more digital assets. I need more podcast episodes. I need to be in bigger groups. So I join certain masterminds. I have guests like you come on and we talk about the importance of growing your business, having the right books in your life, and the importance of writing and the clarity that it gives you. So like all of a sudden you start to stack all these breadcrumbs, right? And then as time goes on, you distance yourself from every competitor to such a high degree that when they think of that industry or that solution, you are top of mind. And I guess that takes time, but takes courage. It takes potentially some timing, right? It's not just about, it's not being time, it's not timing the market, but time in the market. So it's both of those. And so it's a lot of it coming together, but this is a never ending game. And this can be applied to you talking to your team or you talking to the masses. And so if you can communicate your message and your solution in a different manner, a memorable manner, you win. So this never ends. Am I right?
No, that's right. I mean, it never ends. It is something you have to continue doing. And the other thing I want to add to that is that as an individual, don't be intimidated by the idea that you have to be like a global brand or something like that. You don't. What matters, the victories in this realm can be like in your town or in the company you work for. I wrote about in the book about when I grew up. I grew up in this small city in upstate New York called Binghamton, New York, and there was a guy in town named Harold Beam, who was a champion speed skater. He actually made it to the Olympic trials at one point. I guess he was from that town. And he came back and he realized that there was no place to buy ice skates, nobody knowledgeable about how to skate or what skates to buy or anything in town. So he opened this little storefront and town. And then in a matter of time, and he ended up running this business for like 50 years. But, as time went on, he became the first person anybody would think of was, if you thought of like, I need some skates, or I need to, learn about ice skating or what to buy or whatever. And he became this category king in this small town with this small storefront, and made a great living at doing it for lots of years, for 50 years. Yeah. And so that's not creating the next Uber, but it's that idea of how do you do something that's different and needed and sustain it and embed yourself in people's minds as the go-to. And that's the key.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because people think that the only way you can become successful is if you create the next Uber or next Apple. And I've been around enough extremely successful people that is just not the case, right? So I believe it comes down to maybe your legacy that you want to create and leave behind. And maybe it does tie into the movie 300. You really don't need the world to believe in you. You need 300 people to believe in you for you to really win some amazing battles and inspire a lot of people. You don't need to change the world. You change yourself, and then you maybe change your environment around you. And then maybe that could change the world. So thinking smaller and thinking in a way that maybe you can be super proud of your body of work when it's all said and done, worth way more than just going out there to say it's either Uber or die, right?
Right.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. So outside of your own book, is there one that you recommend to our audience? We love asking people who put together these incredible books, and it looks like you almost have 1,000 reviews on Amazon. It's very much resonating with the world. So is there a book that maybe stands out in your life that you recommend to our audience?
Well, I'm gonna bring up one by someone else, and one that I just put out, if I can. So, by the way, a guy named Daniel Kahneman just died, and Daniel Kahneman wrote this book called Thinking Fast and Slow about the way our brains work and cognitive biases.
Ooh, and I gotta read that. You're a psychology guy. I like you way more now. That's great.
Top of mind because he just passed away, but absolutely highly influential book. In my life, but also it had some influence in the book Play Bigger. And then the other thing I want to say is that I've been writing nonfiction books my entire career, and I just published my first work of fiction, a novel, and it's based on journalism work that I did back in the I covered the breakup of the Soviet Union in like late 80s and early 90s, and so this book is set in Moscow amid the breakup of the Soviet Union, about this American who goes over, tries to make a fortune, and ends up getting caught up in the craziness that happened there at that time.
And that's called Red Bottom Line?
Red Bottom Line.
Gotcha. So guys, pull them up on Amazon, many books. And I'm just going to read off a couple things. Kevin Maney is a best-selling author, award-winning columnist, and founding partner at Category Design Advisors. His critically acclaimed book, Play Bigger, How Pirates, Dreamers, and Innovators Create and Dominate Markets, introduced business to the idea of category design and has sold more than 250,000 copies worldwide. Do you have an updated number, or is that the updated number? Because that's unbelievable.
That's the most recent number I know.
That's great. So you're staying up to date on this bio. Not many people do that, so it's great. as a founding partner of CDA, Mania has helped leadership teams at hundreds of companies all over the world focus their strategic thinking through category design. I am telling you right now, I have not heard that. I'm in many masterminds. I've interviewed many people. Think about the category design that your business is a part of. That is huge, man. Never heard that, dude. It's great. Thanks. So anyways, guys, look him up. Easy to find. Many books out there. And I wrote it down, Thinking Fast and Slow. I'm so fascinated with psychology. I'm a Jordan Peterson fan. Are you a Jordan Peterson guy?
I don't know. No.
Oh, Dr. Jordan Peterson. He's a clinical psychologist. Great speaker. Really helped me understand how I think. And so he wrote a book called 12 Rules for Life.
I'll look that up.
Oh, you would love it. So, man, is there a website or a social media channel people can find you on, connect with you, and maybe invite you on as a guest for their podcast?
Absolutely. Well, our firm is called Category Design Advisors. And so there's categorydesignadvisors.com. And by the way, if any of your listeners want to talk with me or one of my partners, there is a button on there called Office Hours. And there's a handful of slots, you know, every week that you can book a free consultation and just have a conversation with us if you want about category design.
And you work with companies from all different backgrounds, all different industries, you know. Totally. What size are you looking for? Because there are many people who listen to this who maybe have 1 to 5, maybe doing 1 million to 5 million. Does it matter?
No. Well, we're willing to talk with and try to help out companies of any size. We've worked with a guy in Brooklyn who owned a string of laundromats, and we worked with an ice cream company, and we've worked with giant public technology companies like LinkedIn. So it's, you know, it's a whole range.
Wow. Yeah, I think it'd be great to host a class within the $1 million circle. So let's stay in touch, because many people would love to hear what you have to say and get to know you and probably work with you. So Kevin Maney, it's been an honor to talk with you, sir.
Thanks for doing this, Mike.
Yeah. Remember, guys, $1 million book will lead to $1 million life. And to cap it off, think like a pirate. Right on.